We can flip to Galatians 5, and we're going to go to Joshua 5. Last week, LaRue spoke out of Joshua 5. I want to bring some of this home. I want to bring a little more definition to some of these things for you, because I don't want us to miss the power and the freedom of the moment. We want to step into the power and the freedom that was made available to us as we walked through that final door and into the inheritance. Because see, it's very possible to receive your freedom but not walk in it. So I'm going to make it very, very plain so we can all walk in it. Amen? Many years ago, in the upper room, Mark's wife, Debbie, spoke a vision. And in that vision, there was a prison. And everybody was locked up. And Jesus walks into the prison. And as he's in the prison, the doors come flying open. All the doors to every cell came open. It's what happened next that I didn't expect. Because in this vision, when the doors came open, there were some people who went running out and out into the sunshine, out into the day, and moving on as quickly as they could possibly move on. There's others who just stood in the doorway but didn't go out. And then there's some who closed the door and locked themselves back in. That was probably 27 or 8 years ago, and I still remember because, I mean, it just went, why would somebody do that? But the reality is it's very easy for us to do that if we're not fully aware the door is open and taking advantage of the door being open. Amen? So Galatians 5 says this, verse 1, it was for freedom that Christ set us free. Therefore, keep standing firm and do not be a subject again to a yoke of slavery. Stand firm. The word steko, and it's a military term meaning plant your feet, lock your knees, and refuse to be moved. Stand firm in your freedom. Stand firm in your freedom. Because the number one secret to being able to walk out of the cell is to stand firm in your freedom when it's granted. Go with me to Joshua 5. Already on. How many of you like a rollback when you go to Walmart? Who wants to find a rollback? You know where they roll back the price? Well, I'm telling you, God has given us a rollback that's more than, you're saving me more than money. There's a rollback that has happened here. I'm going to start in verse 2. At that time, the Lord said to Joshua, make yourself flint knives and circumcise again the sons of Israel a second time. They are in a place called Gilgal. They're on the journey. They're finally coming out of the long journey of 40 years that they've been going around and around and around the mountain. I don't know about you, but I've made a promise to myself that if I got to go around the mountain, I'm only doing it once. I'm not going to do it for 40 years on the same mountain. I'm not going to go around and around and around. They took an 11, I've heard different stories, but from anywhere from 11 to 40 day journey and turned it into 40 years going around and around the same mountain. Let's be determined that, Lord, if I have to go around the mountain, just make it one. And if I don't have to, if I can see the mountain before we get there, I'll just even go another way. Avoid the mountain. And so Joshua made for himself flint knives, verse 3, and circumcised the sons of Israel at Gibeth. And the reason Joshua circumcised is all the people who came out of Egypt, who were males, all the men of war, died in the wilderness along the way after they came out of Egypt. Now think about this. They know that they're about to go into battle in Jericho. So the thing that the Lord tells them to do is disable all the fighting men. basically, all those men were not going anywhere. Their whole fighting force was disabled. Now, that does not sound like sound military doctrine. He does this because up to this point, even though they were God's people, they weren't yet marked by God. See, Gilgal is not just a location, but Gilgal actually becomes, in this place, a spiritual renewal. It's a place of spiritual renewal. Spiritual awakening. Remember last week, prophetically, we went back through and then through the prayer room. And as we're going through the prayer room, you can see all the constitutions and everything that's on the wall. You are subjected. You can feel there's an atmosphere in there that's different than there everywhere else. There's been prayers sent up in that room for 20 years now. There was a giving of the word that happened for this church that set us in where and who we are, and it started to define who we are. And then we came out and we came through the River Jordan. The River Jordan at that point in time, remember, was stacked up all the way back to Adam. Meaning God rolled back. He rolled back, pushed back all the sin, everything of mankind back to its origin. Then we stepped through the doorway and into this place called Gilgal. This whole altar represented Gilgal. And then there was the door into the place of freedom. After we were baked here in Gilgal for a bit, then we stepped into the place of freedom, been to the place of the inheritance. God's moving us into a place of inheritance. It's essential for us to represent and understand the power of being in Gilgal. It's a renewal of their covenant and a reclaiming of their identity and their hope. In order for us to understand that, let's say, well, let's go ahead. Verse 6. For the sons of Israel walked in the wilderness 40 years until all the nation, that is, who came out of Egypt, perished because they did not listen to the Lord. They perished why? They did not listen. He didn't let that group see. And now we get down to verse 8, and when it came about that they finished circumcising all the nation, they remained in their places in the camp until they were healed. I imagine they did. I'm not going into war when I can't move. Verse 9, and then the Lord said to Joshua, today I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you. So that place is called Gilgal to this day. Gilgal simply means rolling away or a circle. Gilgal actually was a place of a circle in multiple ways. What I want to speak about today is the reproach. Reproach basically means shame or disgrace. Stigma. Verbal contempt for sin, failure, or unworthiness. It's a result of things that were done to you or by you. There's a stigma attached to many things that we have shame about. The reproach of Egypt was a reproach because, remember, these guys had been slaves for 400 years. Now, they were no longer in Egypt, but Egypt was still in them. Still in their thinking. Still in their understanding. Still in their heart. Matter of fact, even as they wandered through the desert, they were wishing that they could go back to Egypt. Talk about stupid on stupid. At least out here you're free, but then they wanted to go back. Well, we had onions and leeks for free over there. Yeah, in a lifetime of suffering. There's some effects from slavery that happened. It starts taking part in each individual, but also in the culture. One of those effects from the slavery is that lingering idolatry. Because why? Because Egypt was full of idolatry. And they adopted some of it into their own lives. There was a broken identity. Well, I'm a slave. I guess I'll always be a slave. Broken identity. How many of us, out of our dysfunction of the past, have held on to broken identity? I'm just never going to be any good. Never going to amount to much. My daddy said I wouldn't amount to nothing. We get locked in to the mindset. They had 40 years of wandering, during which all the people around them wondered, is your God really able to deliver you? And they heard and listened. See, it's one thing if they say it, but it's a whole nother thing if we say it. Is my God able to deliver me? Because that's a place of unbelief. It's unbelief that's been, it's unbelief and the rebellion that was resulting from unbelief that kept him wandering around for 40 years. So there was something significant that happened that transpired in that place, but God is saying, I have a different way. He's making them aware. If you'll stop in Gilgal, we're going to deal with that. If you'll stop in Gilgal, I want to bring around an understanding of just who I am. I want to bring you into a renewal of covenant and a renewal of my mercy, a renewal of my grace. Gilgal represents a re-stepping into grace. See, the lie that the enemy wants you to believe is that you're always going to be defined by your past. I don't have to be defined by my past. I don't have to be defined by my past. I don't have to be defined by my daddy's past. I don't have to be defined by my mama's past. It doesn't matter where the past, whose past it is. I do not have to be defined by it. When I understand that, that allows me to start looking towards something that's greater than anything that they might have occurred and achieved. You can carry an offense even out of somebody else's past. I got in trouble for this one. Kim's sister was with us when we were getting all the stuff out in New Mexico, and we were loading up my mother-in-law's stuff to move her to Houston. And as we were looking through all the things and trying to decide what goes and what we have to do something else with, I think a picture of her brother showed up. Now, this brother was younger than Pam, but 5 years older than 6 years older than Kim. He died before Kim was born. When she saw the picture, she began to experience grief. Now realize, she never knew him. Not even as a baby, because he was gone. He passed away several years before she was ever born. But it was a second-hand offense. It was a second-hand grief that she got from her mom, who was dealing with and processing with all those things as Kim was a young child. See, she was affected by somebody else's grief. But it was never her own, even though she acted and was being affected as if it was. You can have a secondhand offense. You can have a secondhand grief. But you don't have to hang on to it just because they did. See, it's very possible for us to step out of the bars, get free from the shackles, and still carry the mindset. Hebrews 3, go with me there for a moment. We're still going to be talking about Joshua 5, but we've got the text down already. Hebrews 3, verse 8. Do not harden your hearts as when they provoked me as in the trial in the wilderness where your fathers tried me by testing me and they saw my works for 40 years. Verse 10. Therefore I was angry with this generation and they said, they always go astray in their heart and they did not know my ways. They did not know my ways. Verse 12, take care of their brethren, lest there be any one of you an evil, unbelieving heart in falling away from the living God. So what he's saying is that all that time that they were in the wilderness was because of unbelief. They were wandering around in the wilderness in unbelief. That was a trial for him as well. They were testing the Lord with their unbelief. I don't know about you, but I don't recommend that. It didn't work out well. They had hardened their hearts. I want you to know, now I'll make an announcement today. What we did last week, the door is open. The door is open. The door is open. Let's not harden our hearts. Let's not walk around in unbelief. Let's grab a hold by faith because the door is open. When we establish that the door is open and we start looking at that, holding on to that by faith, now we can be in alignment and agreement with the Lord. Remember I talked about the prison door? Those prison doors come with prison guards. Okay? The guards look like this. They look like guilt. They look like shame. They look like control. And guess what? Often we keep reemploying them. Because we've listened to the lies that the enemy tells us. The messages that the enemy gives us, like, you're not good enough. You're never going to measure up. How about this one? You're disgusting. I'm not looking at anybody in particular. Or this one, you must manage every outcome or it'll be a disaster. All these OCD types. You got to manage every outcome. Because if you don't, or here's my favorite particular one, be perfect or there will be pain. That was the internal message that kept playing, that it was necessary for me to be perfect, because if I wasn't perfect, then I would get the backhand and it was going to be pain. Be perfect. You know how OCD you get when you've got to be perfect? For example, is there a good reason for cleanliness? Absolutely. Okay. But can it be taken too far? Also, absolutely. I remember my grandma coming with a white glove and touching the upper parts of the door at our house to see if they was going to be dirty. That made my dad a little OCD. When my grandma was coming, that particular grandma was coming, it was all hands on deck. Every kid was scrubbing somewhere, something. Because otherwise, if we find dust, you're not good enough. It stirs something in your heart when things are twisted that way. Is it good to be clean? Absolutely. Does it need to be twisted to that degree? That's an impossible assignment. We live in a fallen world. It's an impossible assignment. How about this one? You're broken. That's why these things keep happening. I was molested twice by the time I got to be 15 years old. And the way that I processed it was, I must be broken. That's why this keeps happening. Now, in reality, it has nothing to do with nothing. But you tend to blame yourself. And then out of my not understanding that, I started trying to prove that I was something that wasn't broken. So therefore, I could drink more than you. I could go faster than you. I could do whatever it was that I thought I needed to do to prove to you that I was better. And I wasn't broken. It took me forever to figure out that I'm not broken. And number two, doing all those things put me in a lot of danger, but it didn't really prove anything. The prison guards want to keep you in your place. The lies are reinforcing yesterday's failures. They're reinforcing old traumas. They're reinforcing our bad choices and confirming tomorrow's fears and lack of hope. Sometimes reproach is just having your reputation stained. So people forever and ever look at you a certain way, but it's not who you are. Oh, that loser. Those dysfunctional people. Those kind of things. God is wanting us to recognize and see our identity the way He sees our identity. He wants us to step out of the identity of the past, because maybe that was your identity. I had an identity as a drug addict at one point in time. And you know what? I don't need that identity anymore in my life. I don't want that identity. I didn't need it when I had it. We can have an identity in something that's totally wrong. Or even in something that's good, but it's not in the right way. I had an identity as, you know, for a long time as the next Richard Petty. Next Richard Petty, he'd race NASCAR, but very famous. But he was my hero. I had an identity as him. That didn't always work out well for every vehicle that I drove. It See, I never had an identity there. It didn't, the jet ski didn't last long enough for that. So there was nothing wrong for being Richard Petty if you are Richard Petty. But if you're not, you can't do that. Let me just speak to something here. Okay? Because sometimes people are putting us back into enslavement with their words and actions, and we don't even see it. Ma'am Donnie is not offering these people free stuff. Ma'am Donnie, who's the guy who will likely be elected, and he declares himself to be a socialist. He's not a socialist, he's a communist. And as a communist in New York, yes. And in New York City. And as a communist, there's not going to be good things happening out of that. Well, that is not free stuff, that is putting people back into bondage. When people are collecting money based on how many kids they have, that's part of what happens in slavery. And with slavery comes a misidentity. You get misidentified. It costs you character, dignity, and your identity. See, what he's actually selling is voluntary enslavement to a system. And that will never set well. That's never going to bring God. God can't be in the middle of that equation. So that's why it's important that we know what it is. Socialism, communism, where people look at what happened in the desert for Israel and say, well, it's the same thing. No, it's not. Why? Because it requires that there be one benevolent being who can present the stuff. What happens in communism is that there are a group of people who are super elevated and everybody else is less than human. That's the end goal. They don't want to help you. They just want you to serve them. I don't know why, but anyway. Because it's something that's out there. People are believing the lie. They don't need to believe it. Socialism. Democratic socialism doesn't actually, that's an oxymoron. It doesn't actually exist. But know that God has a better way. God has a better way. And know that God has always had, even with the people who were wandering the desert, he had an actual agenda. Exodus 7 verse 16 says, "Let my people go that they may serve me." See, he had an agenda for everything that was going on. He made provision for them out of his abundance, but that provision that was in the wilderness was just enough. The provision that was given after the wilderness became more than enough. When they stepped into their land of inheritance, the manna dried up, but abundance happened. See, the circumcision was here for a couple of reasons. Okay? Circumcision is this. It's a painful, vulnerable act. The cutting away of old life and old lies. It's a surrender. And it's an acknowledgement that we actually belong to God. From the moment that they were circumcised, they were once again marked for his kingdom. So when we see that they were doing the circumcision out there in Gilgal, Gilgal was a place of preparation. Why? Because Exodus 12 verse 48 tells us that no uncircumcised person can eat of the Passover. And they were about to receive Passover. He gave them two things to do before they went into Jericho. Before they approached Jericho. One, get everybody circumcised. Two, I want you to all participate in the Passover. What is he doing? He's reminding them of who they are. He's reminding them of the covenant they have with him. And they, by response of doing it, are reminding God that we're your people. I think it's kind of interesting and important that we're in Gilgal. Because it's a preparation. The Passover, recognize, the Passover was how their journey in the wilderness began. It is also how it ended. Let's read. We'll be back in Hebrews 3, or actually in 4. But, so he rolled away the reproach on verse 9. Verse 10, while the sons of Israel encamped against at Gilgal, they observed the Passover on the evening of the 14th day of the month in the desert plains of Jericho. And on the day after the Passover, on that very day, they ate some of the produce of the land, unleavened cakes and parched grain. They did two covenant acts. A Passover that began the wandering and a Passover that ended the wandering. And now they step into the abundance. The very next morning, they started partaking of what was in the land. Remember, they were going to receive houses that they didn't build, lands that they didn't buy. They were going to receive wells that they didn't dig. They were going to receive foods that they didn't plant. They stepped into the inheritance that very next day. See, God responded to their actions of faith. He responded with grace. In the face of your shame, in the face of the lack of favor, God rolls away the past. He rolls away the disfavor. He rolls away the shame. He rolls it all away because it doesn't need to be near you. Gilgal is a place of a rollback. Just like Walmart. It was made possible by grace through faith. But it's more than manumission. In manumission, that just simply means that somebody's given their liberty. In other words, somebody, they took the shackles off, they opened the door, but nothing else needs to happen. So this is more than manumission. It's more than it being than a slave being said, told that you're free. See, because what is happening here is it is made possible by grace, and in that reproach is abolished and it's rolled away. It includes the physical freedom, but it joins it to a renewed and revised mindset. It rejoins it to a new understanding of your identity. It rejoins it to a new understanding of your worth. Shame and disgrace are removed so that you can walk in grace. And let me tell you, you know when you're walking in grace. There have been some moments in my life where I can go, I am walking in the grace. Because why? Because in another situation, the enemy might have been all over it. But now when you're walking in grace, you're walking in accordance to the word. You're walking in accordance to the light. You're walking in accordance to his presence. You're aware of those things when you're walking in grace. You're also, back to Hebrews 4 for a second, you're also walking in rest. See, they didn't go into the promised land because of unbelief. But God's answer for them was the place of rest. The place of faith. See, it's not about my effort. It's about faith. Hebrews 4. Actually, as homework, just read Hebrews 3 and then Hebrews 4, but down to verse 9. There therefore remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For the one who has entered his rest has himself rested from his works, as God did from his. Let us therefore be diligent to enter that rest, lest anyone fall through following the same example of disobedience. What does entering into his rest mean? Well, it means that I quit trying to do it in my own effort and start relying on the power of grace. I quit thinking that in order to keep myself safe, I've got to perform exactly correctly. Remember that thing where I said, you know, if you got to be perfect or else it's pain? You got to let go of that. Great, the rest there. Okay, verse 11, therefore let us labor to be diligent to enter into that rest. That means a removal from office. I've spoken about this before. The removal from office. When I remove myself from the office and the authority over my life and I put Jesus as Lord in my life, it changes everything. When I put Jesus as Lord instead of Chuck as Lord, it changes the whole response system. Now I can move with him. I can move in his heart. I can move in his love. I can move in the dynamics of who he is. And because it's coming no longer out of my effort, but it's coming out of him. And that represents a Sabbath rest. I no longer have to protect myself. I have one who's protecting me. I no longer have to create my identity. I have one whose identity I'm inheriting. I no longer have to move in my own way. I got someone who's making the way. It allows me to be in a place of rest. If I'm not busy trying to measure up to your expectation, I can be in a place of rest. Glory to God. So the answer is rest. By faith. This whole thing in Joshua 5 was casting a picture for us to see of entering into God's rest. Casting a picture for us to see that we don't have to do it in our own strength, that his grace will come alongside. 1 Peter 5 tells us that he's the one who perfects, confirms, and establishes us. And Romans 15 tells us, verse 3 tells us that he will bear our reproach. He will bear our reproach. Isaiah 53 tells us that he bears our sorrows, our pains, our griefs. That he was smitten on our behalf. In this, disgrace is removed. A Colossians 2:11 says that there's a circumcision is made without hands. It's the place of surrender in our heart. The surrender in your heart is the same thing. It's all what God's looking for is the testimony of surrender in your heart. That's what makes the difference. Freedom begins when we quit arguing with grace. Freedom begins when we quit arguing with grace. What do I mean? I mean, when there's no sabotage of unbelief or inaction. See, inaction is another way to sabotage yourself. Lack of follow through is another way to sabotage yourself. When we don't follow through with something, when we don't follow through with what we know to, that there is there to step into freedom, then it's sabotage. John 8:36, Kim quoted that earlier, says, you know, that when the sun sets you're free indeed. I want you to pay attention when you look that up this weekend. I want you to look that up and look. There's no fine print. When your son sets you free, you're free indeed. Free indeed. Remember when we talked about earlier, stand firm? So when we want our freedom from that prison. Stand firm. Here's when we're going to stand firm, when we have our feet bolted down to the floor in my freedom, that means that, number one, the word is going to be my map and not my feelings. The word has to be what I'm hiding in my heart, what I generate my outlook from. Because when the word is in my heart and when my outlook is coming from the word and not my feelings, I am not interrupted or moved off my course by circumstance. Number two, this community that you have here, stay in community. Stay in community. Because isolation is the devil's favorite cage. Isolation can come so many different ways. Sometimes we isolate ourselves because of shame. Sometimes we isolate ourselves because of bitterness or anger or insecurity or disappointment. But know that in every case, when we isolate ourselves, we're actually removing ourselves from the place and the way that God can bring wholeness and healing. Number three, Spirit. See, the Spirit of God is not a spirit of slavery. Romans 8:15. It's not a spirit of slavery leading to fear again. The Spirit of God is what brings you into freedom. The Spirit of God is what brings you into transformation. The Spirit of God brings you into an awakening of who you are, an identifying of who you are. And when that happens, that shifts everything about you. Galatians 2:20 just simply says this. I have been crucified with Christ. It's no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live, I live in the flesh, I live by the faith in the Son of God, who loved me and delivered himself up for me. That's the creed, the declaration of a man who is walking with Jesus, who's walking in grace, who's walking with the fulfillment of the Lord as his target. That's a man who's walking in a return of favor. When we make this our one of your favorite verses, then it becomes, then you're moving into a place of favor. When we make knowing the Lord's ways, that will keep us out of the place of disgrace, because why? Because when I know the Lord's ways, I'm going to know his favor. So just to sum it up, Gilgal is a rollback, a renewing of covenant, a preparation. It's not the destiny, it's the launching pad. Gilgal becomes the launching pad. Every one of us didn't stay in Gilgal in the prophetic enactment. They went through the door and into the place of freedom, into the place of inheritance. Because when you go through the door and into the place of freedom and into the place of inheritance, now you're actually completing the journey. It was only supposed to be a temporary stopping over place, a place to refill, refuel, and renew. But when we refill, refuel, and renew, now it's time to go out and explore what the Lord has purchased for us. Don't have to be owned by the past. The door is open. Step through. Step through. Amen? Amen.